Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, June the 26th. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about Mexico and what's going on south of the border. President-elect Sheinbaum putting together a cabinet. So our good friend Alan Wall, old friend of our show and a blogger who writes a great deal about Mexico, is joining us. Hello, Alan. Welcome. It's always great to have you.
Well, thanks. Glad to be on, as usual.
All right. Well, is it really hot? It's terribly hot here in North Texas.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So, right. I mean, it is hot.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be over, it's close to 100 degrees all week around here. So thank God for air conditioning. So,
yes.
I don't know what people did around here before air conditioning. I wasn't living here before air conditioning, but it must have been a very, very hot place. And
yeah.
But I did have a friend who lived in East Texas, and he grew up in the 30s and 40s, and he said that the homes were different. There was a lot more ventilation,
right?
And people actually, you know, didn't really object that much. So I don't know.
Right, right. Well, you can't miss what you don't have. You know, if it doesn't exist, you're not going to miss it.
Well, that's it. That's right. You didn't. You couldn't complain about the heat. I mean, you didn't have the air conditioning. You're right. To look at. But I did see a picture today of the Dallas skyline in 1942. And I was surprised by the number of buildings with 15 or 20 floors. Because in 1942, there had to be air conditioning to have buildings like that. So maybe by then it was already more common in the cities. But the rural areas around here, there was no air conditioning
right.
for a long time.
Yeah, well, those old houses, they would do certain things that could make it a little cooler, you know, the way they built the houses.
And I also learned that people back then had a lot more, or would strategically get close to under trees. I mean, a lot of the, like we were traveling this weekend, we drove to Houston. And on the way back, you know, there are parts, you're on I-45, but nevertheless, you do go through these, sometimes these little towns, and you see these homes, and most of the homes had a tree nearby.
Oh, right.
So I think those people really, you know, understood that being under the shade.
The old farmhouses, they would always have trees around the farmhouse.
That's right. That's right. It's just as a way of staying cool. You know,
yes.
And if you notice, too, they always had like a little pond nearby for just, you know, to refresh themselves. So but like you say, you cannot miss what you don't have. And people back then figured it out somehow. They survived it. And here we are. We're so spoiled, I think, by the air conditioning. It's it's hard for me to believe what it would be like if all of a sudden, you know, everything went out. Well, you and your son graduated, right, from high school. So
from
you took
college,
a little, and you took a little trip, and you wrote an article about this, and I just thought it was fascinating. You went to a lot of different places, including up in Canada. So just give us a little highlight of that article.
Oh, it was a great trip. My wife and son and I, and my son planned the whole trip and drove the whole way. We went to 10 states and one Canadian province, went all the way to the West Coast, you know, Yellowstone, California Redwoods, San Francisco. Just a fascinating trip. All the scenery we saw and the places we visited.
Yeah. And which Canadian province did you get up to?
British Columbia.
Oh,
and we
went
to Vancouver and out into the, you know, countryside.
And then you also mentioned something about San Francisco, which is kind of sad, really, that San Francisco used to be one of the most beautiful cities in the world.
Right.
And here recently, it's just not a very nice place to visit anymore. But it used to be beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, the tourist areas still look pretty good. But, you know, there are areas where you got drug abusers camping on the streets. It's just, you know, why do they allow that? But so you got to watch out for that. Yes.
Yeah. Why do they allow it? I mean, that's the question. No one has an answer for. I mean, how does that help the city?
Exactly.
To tolerate that. I mean,
right.
The same thing. I think Seattle too, from what I understand. Portland.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we saw homeless people in every city. Every city. Big city, you know.
Right. And I'm sure they're blaming it on Trump.
Oh, probably, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of Trump, Mr. President Trump has a debate tomorrow night with Mr. President Biden. I know your son likes history, but maybe you've explained to your son how unique this is. We haven't had two presidents running against each other since Cleveland in 1892. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
So we haven't had anything like this before where one guy says, well, when I was in, and then the other guy says, well, I'm in now. We haven't had anything like that ever. Well, not ever, but certainly not in the era of the media and radio and TV. Right.
In our life.
Yeah. So that in itself is pretty historic. I mean, for your son who likes a lot of history. I don't know what to make of this debate, Alan, because it's happening at the end of June when most of us are usually not into debates. So many times they have primary debates this late in the campaign. Remember when Robert Kennedy was shot, was in June of 68.
Right.
And they were still having debates in the California primary back then. So, I mean, that just shows you how crazy this year is. Here we're having a debate,
before the convention,
it's crazy. But if you were advising, let's say, President Trump, what would you tell him, Alan?
I would say stick on several topics that help you out. And if he's got to read Biden, but the best way sometimes is let Biden talk and hang himself, you don't have to correct everything Biden says, but just get in some words edgewise. I think he ought to emphasize, the border, the economy, foreign policy, things that can help Trump.
Right. And I think the fear is that Biden is going to be so programmed.
Yeah. Or drugged up.
Or maybe that too. That like 20 minutes into the debate, he may just forget where he is. Yeah. I mean, that sounds terrible, but.
Yeah, it could happen.
Well, if you remember during the State of the Union, but that there he was reading a speech. Here, he's not going to be reading a speech. He's going to be answering questions. So I don't know.
Well, flexible.
It's going to be a high risk, I think, action. Now, Trump's problem, I kind of put it this way. The problem with Biden is that he could say something stupid, like my uncle got shot down and, eaten by sharks or something like that.
Yeah.
But Trump's problem is a lack of discipline. He doesn't know when to stop talking.
Right.
So if he can just stick to a talking point, I think he'll be all right. But so often he just goes off on these tangents that I think will actually hurt him. So we'll see how it all works. Maybe they'll talk about Mexico too, kind of taking us into our topic tonight. Maybe they'll ask him about the new president of Mexico, who, of course, as you know, is president-elect Claudia Sheinbaum, as they like to pronounce it down there. Sheinbaum, which is Sheinbaum. How do you hear it when you hear it?
When I was watching the debate, I heard it like Sheinbaum. Yeah, Sheinbaum. Yeah. I would say it Sheinbaum, but whatever.
Well, what I find interesting is how often she reminds people that she is la presidenta. It's almost like she seems to be going out of our way. And I don't think that's an accident. I think that's a strategy to keep the Western media talking about the fact that she's the first woman president.
Right. Focus on that, not the issue.
Focus on that, exactly. But her biggest challenge, Alan, we talked about this before, and that is the connection that she has to President López Obrador, who's still the president.
Right.
And I think that she's going to have to break with him at some point if she really wants to have a successful presidency. I mean, that's my feeling. She has to break with him. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, because after all, she's the protege of AMLO, she's in the party that he founded, you know, it's very hard to get out from under his shadow. And also, you know, just the way AMLO is, you know, his personality. And of course, AMLO has said that he said he's going to retire to his ranch and write a book. It's, well, we'll see, but it's very hard to imagine him staying out of the public eye.
He'll probably do morning press conferences from his ranch, you know?
From his ranch in the jungle, yeah.
Right. But you wrote a really great article. I thought you could expand a little bit on this political party, Morena. And now it has just exploded. I mean, this is a political party that is not even 20 years old, I don't think.
It's 10 years old. And look at what they've accomplished, you know.
And how they have penetrated into just everything in Mexico. I mean, they have the presidency, the Senate, the Congress, and they have super majorities in those three, right? And all of
and
that.
And most of the governorships.
Most of the governorship.
It's astonishing when you think it's a 10-year-old political party, and all the traditional parties are greatly diminished. I mean, it's like an earthquake in, you know, Mexican political world that's happened in the last 10 years.
It really is, as you mentioned in your article. I think that on one hand, that's a tremendous accomplishment. On the other hand, of course, that could also bring some problems. But I agree with you. I'm amazed at how quickly the other political parties have collapsed. I mean, I expected, you know, PAN to have success up north. No, they haven't. I mean, they pretty much faded like all the others.
Right. And then you had this, Xochitl Galvez. She's running with this weird coalition of three parties. And, you know, one's a left-wing party, one's a right-wing, one's kind of in the middle. And they're running as one party. And they can't even get, you know, they can't even win with that. It just shows you how much the political world has changed. And you got to hand it to AMLO, you know, whether you agree with his policies or not. He is a master political operator.
No, he's done an amazing job. I mean, I am amazed at the size of the victories and what you say, the governorships. I mean, there was always hope in Mexico because the PAN would be successful in the north, and at least you had that counterbalance. But now it's Morena all the way, including these reforms, these judicial reforms, where the judges are going to be elected in elections, I guess regular elections.
Right.
And that, of course, means they're all going to be favorable to Morena because those are the people who are going to win. And there's a story that appeared on the Mexico Pulse News today where many judges want to visit with the president-elect and say, look, you know, we think this is a bad idea. We think that there's something valuable about having checks and balances, as we used to call it in school when we took our government classes.
Yeah.
And I think that's a valid point. That's a valid point. That if you make it all one party doing everything, the potential in the potential for mistakes, I think, is pretty big, Alan.
Oh, exactly. And if you look at the month of September, what's unique about that, the new Congress will be in office, but AMLO will still be president. They overlap for 1 month. And he is not a lame duck. He is still in control. He is still, you know, setting the agenda, and he wants to pass those. So it might not even matter what Claudia Sheinbaum thinks.
Right.
You know, he probably can get those passed.
Well, he's got the numbers, it looks like, at least in the Congress, whether they can change the judiciary, I don't know. Maybe the lame duck here is Claudia Sheinbaum.
It seems like it, and she hasn't even taken office.
Right. Maybe she's the one who's going to be. Now, there is interesting, because she's getting, I catch some of these interviews that they do on YouTube and, you know, a lot of different podcasts from Mexico. And there does seem to be, she does get a lot of questions about whether, you know, the particularly foreign investment is going to be able to trust the new system. And she keeps coming back to the same line, well, no, nothing's going to happen. We're still going to respect foreign business and foreign investment. But, you know, that may be what she's saying. But if you have a political system where everything is in the hands of Morena, if I'm an investor, I'd be worried, Alan.
Yes. And the investors, you know, they have to decide if they're going to invest more, if they think that investments are safe. And that's why that they had the peso, you know, the peso dropped and the markets dropped. They think it's because these, you know, this worry about, you know, Morena becoming the, you know, most powerful party and able to set the whole agenda.
Right. I was listening to an interview with one of the economists who's going to be on her team, not the Secretary of Economy, but one of the many advisors. And it was a lady, and she was saying that it's very important for Mexico to participate in what they call near sourcing. I think it's what they call it, or basically it's where companies move from Mexico or from China to Mexico to take advantage. There's a word for it. I can't think of it right now.
Nearshoring.
Nearshoring. Yeah. Where companies are moving from Mexico, from China, and they're going to Mexico. You remember the electric car company that wanted to build electric cars in Mexico for the U.S. market that prompted Trump to say that he would put a tariff on that. But, you know, that may be, if you're going to attract a lot of those companies, another issue is that she has been a very strong advocate for these green energy policies.
Right.
The problem is, if you want to discourage American companies from setting up in Mexico, start talking to them about the Green Deal, the green energy, because that's going to turn them off. Because, I mean, they might as well put their plant in Texas or in Louisiana or Arkansas or whatever, so that they don't have to go to Mexico and live with all these regulations out.
And there's a lot of speculation because we know that Sheinbaum, you know, she was a scientist that actually specialized in that, in energy engineering. And she is a, you know, a promoter of the climate change agenda. And although AMLO wasn't really into that, you know, he still was promoting, fossil fuels, traditional energy. But there's a question is, you know, what's she going to do now about energy? That's a big question, too.
Well, we were talking a couple of days ago to a lady in Mexico, and I asked her the question. I said, you know, what about, you know, green energy and moving Mexico in that direction? Are you guys even ready for that? And she said no. And then she brought up the example of the electric car. She said that, you know, there are electric cars in Mexico. They're very expensive, but there aren't enough charging stations.
Right.
Which then means that you have to use your own home to charge your car, which means there's more pressure on the electric company, I guess, to. So I think that she may find out that all this stuff sounds really good in theory, but it's maybe very difficult to implement in Mexico, Alan.
Right.
Now, the other big influence, and I heard this from this lady we were talking on the phone to the other day. She said that a lot of people are concerned about the influence of China, but China is apparently everywhere.
Mexico.
I mean, Latin America too, but in
right,
Mexico.
Right. All over Latin America. Yeah.
And, China is, I guess, you know, wants to have a manufacturing base there for the American market. It's hard to tell where that's going to go, but I'm guessing that if Trump is president, and I think he is going to be, that Trump isn't going to go along with that. That Trump is going to get very tough on these Chinese products just walking into the United States without some kind of a tariff or without some kind of an arrangement with the Mexican government about illegal immigration or whatever. I mean, this is going to get complicated, Alan.
Right. And since we have our, you know, our North American trade pact, a lot of those things could affect that, like, you know, the China stuff and all of that. So, yeah,
that'll be an issue. In fact, in one of the interviews that I saw with her, she said something that we would live by the North American Free Trade Agreement. It's not called that anymore, but whatever it's called right now, I think it's called U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement.
Right.
It's not NAFTA anymore. It's a different name. But she said that she would, that, you know, she was, that Mexico was going to live in that arrangement. But, you know, China can put a lot of pressure on a country because they come in and they can invest a lot of money on it.
Right. Right. And they're all over I've noticed in South America, Central America, it's kind of concerning, you know, how much Chinese influence there is in this hemisphere.
And then, of course, there is the whole issue of fentanyl, which I think will be, maybe it'll come up in the debate. I sure hope so.
Probably, yeah.
I hope it does. But there is, you know, and we've seen stories about this of, you know, China behind much of the fentanyl fabrication or fentanyl processing or whatever in Mexico. I mean, that would be, if I was the president of Mexico, I'd be very concerned about bringing in China as much as I think they will be. China is a difficult country to do business with. They usually want to win. They want to have the last word. Yeah. And they don't exactly come from a culture where you respect contracts. You know, that's the difference with the United States. The United States comes from a culture, or American businesses come from a culture where they respect contracts and the rule of law. That's right. Not how the Chinese work. So I'd be concerned if I was Mexico, Alan.
Oh, yes. Yes. That will be another issue to deal with. And then,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, this Claudia Sheinbaum takes office October 1st. And then, you know, in the following January, we'll be having an inauguration for one of these two guys in the debate. So we'll see how they work together.
We'll see how it works. Now, one last thing that I wanted to mention, and this one caught me a bit by surprise. I was not aware of the fact that the Mexican military under AMLO had expanded it. I mean, I had heard something that they were running one of the trains, one of the tracks, I guess, in South Mexico. But the article that I saw, or the interview that I saw, they're everywhere. I mean, Mexico has, I mean, they've become a huge force inside Mexico. And I was listening to a Mexican on one of these videos saying, they're not fighting crime anymore. They're just,
right.
They're running businesses. They're running the airports. They're running the railroads. But, you know, they're not fighting crime. I mean, it's like, it's almost like the army has a different mission under President López Obrador, Alan.
Right. The video, I believe it's in that, you sent me the video. It's a Bloomberg video. But yeah, it's like they're involved in all these business deals, constructions, transportation, airports. And it reminded me of what the same thing, you know, in communist countries like China, Venezuela,
Cuba.
And Cuba, like you pointed out, Cuba. I mean, that's what they do in those countries.
Well, in Cuba, the military is involved in much of the tourism. I mean, these hotels are basically, the military is involved in that. And I don't know what the motivation, I mean, I know what the motivation in Cuba is. It's a totalitarian country where you have one man running everything. But I'm not sure what the motivation in Mexico would be. And I kept speculating as to why would López Obrador want to give the army that much power. And maybe it's because he wants to make them rich, so that they don't overthrow him or something like that. I mean, that sounds kind of crazy, but why else would he give him all that power?
Yeah, I mean, that's what, like in Venezuela, you remember a few years ago, there was, you know, a possible overthrow of the government. But the problem is the guys who run the military, they're, you know, making some, they're not going to overthrow the government because they're making too much money. So you hate to think, so it you get them in the system and where they won't, you know, work against you. I think that's what they're thinking.
Well, whereas in Cuba, that's the case.
The same thing, yeah.
Yeah, right. In Cuba, that's the case. I mean, if you're a military general, you live a lot better than a military general in the United States. I'll tell you that right now.
Why would you overthrow the government?
Yeah. Why would you overthrow the government when, you know? Now, again, that there's other issues, too, in there. I mean, many times when there is a coup, it comes from beneath or underneath. It doesn't necessarily come from the generals. But in that video that I sent you, you may recall one interview where one man said that the reason that AMLO likes the military is because they respond, yes, sir, whenever he tells them something, yes, sir. And bureaucrats usually don't do that.
Right.
I mean, bureaucrats are saying, well, maybe I'll get to it next week. I'm on vacation next week. You know, that kind of thing.
Or they might say, yes, sir, and they do the exact opposite.
Or they just push it from one desk to the other, you know.
Right.
But with the military, there's that military discipline that you're aware of, being a veteran. Yes. There's that military discipline where usually if you get the order, it gets done. There's accountability. And it's interesting. I when that man in the video said that's one of the reasons that López Obrador apparently likes yes people around him.
Oh, of course. That, no doubt about that.
Yeah. So I think that month between the new Congress and the new presidency could end up being pretty consequential in different ways, I guess.
Exactly. Yes. He's going to be doing stuff right till the very end, I think.
He's not going away. I think we can, you know, he may have a different address, but he's not. This whole thing is too much like his baby.
Yes.
You know,
right.
You know what I mean?
His party.
His party. So he's sort of like the guy who built this company. And now the time has come to retire. But he keeps checking in every day to see how things are going. That's kind of what he reminds. And of course, so I stick to my earlier point. I think that she has to break with him visibly as soon as possible. Whether she can do it, I don't know. Maybe she gets overthrown by the military then. You know, I don't know. But
yeah, hopefully not. I mean, nothing like that's happened in Mexico since the revolution. You know, that would be.
And we're not hoping for that either.
Right. Of course not. No, that would be a disaster. Yeah.
Well, it would be absolutely horrible. But there are some great opportunities looking at it on the bright side. There are some great opportunities in Mexico with the proximity to the United States. And if we can resolve this immigration issue, this illegal immigration issue, and focus more on trade and business development, I think Mexico could prosper significantly from this, and so can the United States. I mean, we are the Mexico is the largest trading partner of the United States, I believe.
And there's a lot.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's a lot of trade going on, and they don't want to put that at risk. They don't want to put that in danger.
No, they shouldn't. And I mean, Texas is. The number one trading partner of Texas is Mexico.
Yes, right.
I mean, it's an amazing relationship. Well, I guess we'll have to invite you back for that month of suspense coming up later. So that's going to be September, right? When that
September, right.
The month of September.
The new Congress with the old president.
So in the words of that famous song from the 1950s, see you in September.
Yes.
You know, I'll see you in September. Maybe before that, but definitely for sure. That's going to be fascinating. AMLO trying to get his reforms through a Congress that he runs completely. And then you've got these judges over here who are not happy.
Right.
I see a little confrontation coming. Let's see. Let's hope it can all be. I think, again, I'll just say this to close. I think it would be a huge mistake to do away with the judiciary. I mean, the Mexican Supreme Court has actually been pretty responsible here lately. And if they become nothing but, you know, an extension of Morena, I think the country's going to suffer a lot.
Right. Because they're autonomous. They have ruled against the government.
Right.
And of course, AMLO doesn't like that.
No, most presidents don't like it, but at least right. you know there's a check on the presidency, just like there is up here. Well, Alan, thank you so much, as always, for your time and your input. And tell your son that I really enjoyed hearing about his trip. And okay. that it was just a lot of fun. And I'm impressed that he planned it. Why did he want to go to British Columbia? I'm curious. Was that just on the way or?
Well, he just wanted to go to the region, you know, the Northwest. He hadn't mm-hmm. been there before and said, hey, since we're there, let's go to Canada. And that was fit in with, we were up there in Washington State, you know, so.
So did he ask you why they called it British Columbia? Because I don't know the answer.
Well, it's because of the Columbia River, which, you know, starts in Canada, then it goes in the United States. And actually, Queen Victoria named it British Columbia.
There you go. And I think the capital of British Columbia is, I don't know. I should know, but is it Victoria?
Yes. And it's on, it's kind of confusing. It's on Vancouver Island.
Right.
The city of Vancouver is not on Vancouver Island. And then there's a Vancouver, Washington. Right. And there's a Vancouver River, et cetera, et cetera.
And but there's a lot of Chinese.
Go to Vancouver Island. Oh, excuse me.
Right. And there's a lot of Chinese in British Columbia, too.
Oh, yes.
A lot of Chinese money that came there after Hong right. Kong went down.
Yes.
Almost 20 years ago. But it must be a beautiful part of the country. I mean, British Columbia, just the pictures I've seen. I mean, there's a documentary that I saw one time that just left me astonished is how beautiful Canada is. There's a train that starts in like Nova Scotia and goes all the way through Canada, all the way, I guess, to Vancouver. So wow. it travels all through the whole country. I mean, it's just a beautiful sight.
That'd be a great trip.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a documentary that they had one time. And the sights were just unbelievable. And yeah. you can take it in the summertime or the winter or the summer. And at one point, I guess during the trip, you can get off in different places and spend a couple of days and get back on the train later. But I don't know. The beauty of Canada is just unbelievable. I mean, for just what I saw on that trip and what I've seen on pictures and so on, just absolutely beautiful. I assume a lot of the Pacific Northwest is just as beautiful too, Alan.
Oh, it's a great area. And you got like the California redwoods and the Pacific. It's just beautiful, beautiful area.
Well, as I always like to impress everybody with my knowledge of highways, number 5 is on the Pacific, right? And 95 is on the Atlantic. So you probably took part of Highway 5 or the Federal Highway 5, Interstate 5, if you were traveling up the West Coast, right? Or were
we switched around some, but we were part of the time.
Yeah, because Highway 5, I guess, goes from San Diego to Vancouver or to Canada. And then Highway 95 starts, I believe, in Key West and goes all the way up to Canada as well, but it's on the Atlantic coast. Well, Alan, we're so impressed, aren't we? Or so knowledgeable when it comes to highways. But I got to tell you this. This is kind of a funny thing. I was looking at a map of Mexico one time. I thought about driving to Mexico one time. And I was looking at all the highway numbers. And I said to my wife, you know, if we take 57 down to this number, and she said, there's a problem. Nobody in Mexico calls them by numbers. They have numbers, of course, but that's not how they just call it. Carretera de Querétaro, la carretera de
right.
this.
Right? Yeah.
They don't use numbers like we do up here. So
right.
that's
yeah. That's true. That is really yeah. true.
Yeah. So I had to learn a different name for them, but I had it all planned out. You know, you take 57 from the U.S. border down to, what was it? Querétaro, I think. And then you take this one, but they weren't very impressed with how much I knew of their highways by numbers. They just didn't, they just weren't impressed with that. They said, you know, I know you do that up there. They said, but we don't do that here. We just, you know, Carretera Federal, whatever, from here to there, and that's and that's it. So I learned my lesson. Don't try to impress Mexicans by telling them the highway number, because they're not going to be very bad. All right, Alan, have a great evening. Thank you, as always, so much to chat with you, and we'll do it soon.
Okay, thank you. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Alan Wall, just talking a little bit about Mexico and what is going on down in Mexico with a president-elect and a new president. And anytime you have a president-elect, of course, you have things you look forward to. In this particular case, a most unusual situation, because the outgoing president is still very much involved in the country, and the incoming president is very much attached to the outgoing. So it's going to create some interesting tension, I think, between the outgoing president and the incoming president. We'll see how it plays out. I wrote an article recently at the American Thinker saying that she has to break with him. That is, Claudia Sheinbaum has to break with him at some point. Otherwise, she's going to have a lot of difficulty getting things done. Thank you for listening. And this is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.